He swallowed as he backed away, trying his hardest not to startle the cat. It barely looked at him. "I'll be right back." He kept his movements slow until he reached the door. Then he turned and jogged to the gardener's hut. The cat isn't flighty, so it must have been someone's pet at one point. It's a long way for a cat to wander from the nearest town, but no one has lived in the mansion in the last couple of decades. How'd it get here? He leapt through the cabin's door, skidded on the wooden floor, and turned towards the kitchenette. He remembered seeing a tin of Spam in the cupboard. It wasn't ideal cat food, but it was better than nothing. He found a plate in one of the drawers, wrenched the tin open, and scooped spoonfuls of the slimy pink substance onto the plate. The journey back to the mansion was slower, as he struggled to balance the plate while climbing over dead trees. He began to worry the cat might have wandered off, but as he re-entered the foyer, it was still sitting by the staircase. The lamp's light created a warm glow across its fur, which had probably once been glossy but was rough with age. Its ears twitched towards him, and Daniel smiled. "Here you go, little guy. I got you something to eat." He lowered himself close to the ground and extended the plate as he crept forward. The cat made eye contact for half a second, then turned, flicked its tail, and climbed the stairs.
"Wait, come back! Food, kitty, food!"
"I sound like an idiot." Daniel couldn't help himself. He grabbed the lamp and followed the cat. Plate held out as though that might tempt the creature to stop. It didn't seem afraid, just bored of him. So he followed it around the bend at the top of the stairs and towards the third floor landing. Tiny puffs of dust exploded around his feet with every step. The higher they climbed, the more cobwebs clustered along the railings and architraves. They clung to Daniel's arms when he wasn't being careful. Then a large invisible one snagged over his face when he was nearly at the third floor. He stopped, face scrunched up, and tried to brush the threads away without dropping the plate of food or the lamp. By the time he had cleared his eyes, the cat had vanished into the shadows. "Hello? Little guy?" Daniel craned his neck to see his small companion. The lamp's light didn't reach as far as he would have liked, but it highlighted elaborate molding running along the ceiling and the whorls in the hand-carved balustrades. He peered over the railing and saw the foyer stretched out below him, magnificent in its scope and tragic in its abandonment. He considered returning to the ground floor and slinking back to the cottage. The letter hadn't forbidden him from exploring the house, but he couldn't shake the feeling that he was intruding on someone else's domain. But the dust under his feet was thick and undisturbed, and he didn't want to give up on the starving cat yet.
"Psst, cat, come back, please."
He crept the final six steps to the third floor landing. The stairs opened into an open area of at least 12 square feet. To his left and right, hallways stretched away until they eventually faded into shadows. Despite their age, the bronze wallpaper and royal blue carpet looked beautiful. Paintings lined the gallery walls. The halls felt eerily quiet, almost as though they were sleeping. Straight ahead, a short passageway extended deeper into the house. Its floor was uncarpeted stones, and it had only one destination, a massive wooden door. It looked thick, thicker even than the front doors, and the wood was painted tar black. Daniel, mesmerized, lifted his lamp higher as he crept towards it. Tiny crystals had formed over the stones at the door's base. They sparkled in his lamplight. An emblem had been painted across the wood's black tar in a striking white paint, a circle with a cross running over it. Four massive bolts ran up the door's side. They were all locked, sealing the doorway, but the metal was so rusted that Daniel thought he could break them without much strain. What is this place? He quickly realized what he was looking at. The door to the tower. The one the letter explicitly forbade him from opening. An uneasy groan escaped Daniel's parted lips. He took a step back from the door as chills ran up his arms like tiny spiders. "Do not enter the tower." Daniel swallowed and checked over his shoulder to make sure he was alone. Even when he wasn't looking at the door, he could feel its presence, massive, daunting, threatening. What is Bran keeping up there? It can't be where he's living, surely. If he is, then why are the bolts on the outside? Daniel put the lamp down and reached towards the door. He couldn't stop himself. He had no intention of touching any of the four locks, but he wanted to understand the mystery. His fingertips brushed the wood in the center of the painted cross, and he instantly recoiled. Something had thrummed through the wood like a low electrical current. With it came an immense sense of malaise. Suddenly, he felt as though his whole world were a second away from crumbling, as though the shadows were alive, creeping towards him, their long, cruelly sharp fingers twitching as they stretched towards his throat. "Do not enter the tower." He snatched up his lamp and dashed to the stairs. Juggling the plate and lamp in one hand, he wiped away the perspiration running into his eyes. His footsteps were like a drum, echoing back from the 100 hidden nooks scattered through the mansion. He felt dwarfed by the building. The air inside was stifling to the point of being suffocating. His lungs worked to suck in oxygen, but it never seemed to be enough. Dizziness crashed through him, and he came to a halt on the second floor landing, gasping and shaking, while he waited for his vertigo to subside. The sensation of being suffocated faded, and he realized he'd been hyperventilating. He placed the lamp on the carpeted floor and leaned back against a dusty banister. "Get a hold of yourself, Daniel. There's nothing to be afraid of." If Bran didn't want him in the tower, well, that was fine by him. He'd watched enough horror movies to know what happened to people who opened doors they weren't supposed to, and his curiosity was no match for his desire to stay alive and keep all of his body parts where they were supposed to be. As the panic abated, Daniel became more aware of his surroundings. The second floor landing was similar to the first, with hallways to his left and right, their doors all closed, and their walls swathed in golds and dark, dusty blues. The painting on the wall ahead of him was larger than the others he'd glimpsed, taller than Daniel, even, and it dominated the space. Daniel tilted his head back to absorb the image. It was a portrait of a girl. She couldn't have been older than 11 or 12. Blonde hair, so light it was almost white, cascaded down her back and curled around her face in delicate wisps. Large blue eyes looked down at Daniel. He frowned as he tried to read the expression. There was curiosity in the eyes, and the cherub blue lips were quirked up at the corners. But together, the features held an air of vulnerability, even fear, perhaps. Daniel lifted the lamp to bring the details into relief. The girl's pastel blue dress dated her to the Regency era, possibly slightly before. Her cheeks had a hint of pink, but every other part of her skin was so pale it was almost ghostly white. Lilies clustered behind her. A brooch had been clasped onto her dress. The motif on the jewelry seemed familiar, but Daniel couldn't place where he'd seen it before. A gold plaque set into the portrait's frame held a name. Daniel shook his jacket sleeve over his hand and used it to brush off the dust. Annalise Myrix. "Who were you, Annalise?" The dress looked expensive. Her hairstyle was simple but well done. Blue eyes, so full of expression and yet so inscrutable, seemed to follow him when he moved. She must have been important. The painting was massive and done with a lot of skill. Its frame was gilded and elaborate, and its location seemed intended to give it attention. It would be visible to anyone traversing the stairs, and Daniel also suspected it could be seen from the foyer if he had enough light and stood in the right place. It was a little strange, though, that she was so young in the painting. Most historical family portraits Daniel had seen featured adults or a whole family clustered together. Daniel was struck by a sudden need to know more about the family who owned Craven Manor. He put the plate of spam on the carpet beside the stairs. The note had forbidden him from going into the tower, but it said nothing about the rest of the house. It would be all right to look in a couple of the rooms, wouldn't it? Daniel looked down both sides of the hallway. They seemed to stretch on forever, until his lamplight became too weak to cut through the shadows. He rubbed at the back of his neck, where nervous prickles had grown, then took a hesitant step to the left. The doors were all tall, made of dark wood, and firmly closed. Daniel turned the handle to the closest room. The metal screeched and fought against him before clicking open. The wooden slab drew outwards, and Daniel, feeling deeply uncomfortable, stepped in. Chapter 6. Opulent, rich colors assaulted Daniel's eyes. Even with the smothering layer of dust, the bright golds and reds were too much for his senses. He'd found a guest room where a large four-poster bed took up the left-hand side of the space. A bureau with a wash basin sat against the right-hand wall. Daniel crept through the room. He was careful not to touch any of the antiques as he examined them. Everything seemed to date the building to the same time as the portrait, a little more than 200 years old. Tightly closed windows had kept moisture from destroying the room, but it still showed its age. The basin was stained, and a long crack ran through it. The bed's mattress had a depression in its center, where it had decayed. The long curtains on either side of the large paned window had been attacked by moths until they were little more than rags. Daniel was drawn towards the view. The glass was smudgy from generations of built-up grease and dirt, but he could see farther than from the ground. Daniel leaned close and held his breath to stop it from fogging up the panes. The garden was larger than he'd expected. The tip of what looked like his gardener's cottage stood out to the far left. The plants were tangled and heavy in that section, but grew lighter to the right. When he stood on his toes and turned his head, he caught a glimpse of a large stone shape in a copse of pine trees. Daniel had seen similar peaked stone roofs in cemeteries. There had been one on top of the hill near the place he'd buried his grandmother. Her grave wasn't fancy. Her generosity and hospital bills had taken everything she'd earned in her life, and she'd died poor. Daniel remembered sobbing after the funeral, furious with himself for not having been able to afford anything better than the cheapest coffin. He left the window, his throat tight and itchy, and returned to the hallway. The thrill of exploring the house was gone. The tall, dark halls had lost their air of mystery and seemed depressive and lonely. He stopped under Annalise's portrait. On the second viewing, her expression seemed to hold a sheen of terror carefully concealed under a genial mask. He didn't know why her expression bothered him so much, but it wouldn't be something he could quickly forget. Daniel collected the plate of spam and took it down to the ground floor. Though the black cat remained elusive, Daniel left the plate between two overstuffed, collapsing wingback chairs near the fireplace. He'd seen the cat there when he'd entered the building, so he hoped it would return and find the food. In line with the house's aesthetic, the fireplace was oversized and elaborate. Daniel could have laid down in the grate and fit comfortably. A row of decorations ran along its mantelpiece. The candles were all half-melted, and the dead branches had probably once held fir leaves. Next to a clock that hadn't ticked in a long time were six metal photograph frames, all highly detailed, and all empty. Daniel retrieved his note from his pocket and placed it in one of the empty patches near the center of the mantelpiece. The space was cluttered, but everything else was blurred with dust, so his crisp white note stood out clearly. A shadow moved along the wall near the stairs. Daniel squinted at it, trying to make out shapes amongst the heavy gloom. A small clot of shadows broke away from the wall and strolled towards him. Daniel grinned as he recognized the cat. "Hey, buddy. Came back, did you?" The cat planted its front paws on the stone and dipped its head and shoulders, stretching its back. The skin moved over sharp bones, as though there was nothing in between, and heartache tightened Daniel's throat again. Then the cat straightened and resumed its sentry position a dozen paces away from him, sitting tidily, tail wrapped around its feet. "Food," Daniel pointed to the plate. "I'm not going to chase you again, but I'll leave this here for you to eat, okay? I'll bring more tomorrow." He knew the cat couldn't understand him, but the words made him feel better. The cat had probably been astray for so long that it would never let him get very close, but he could at least feed it and make sure it was comfortable in its twilight years. Its fur hadn't started to gray yet, but its joints seemed stiff, making its movements stilted and slow. A haggardness around its face suggested it had lived a long life. "Take care, little guy. If Bran drops by, say hello to him for me, okay?" Daniel kept his movements smooth as he backed towards the door. The cat's amber eyes followed him, but showed no sign of curiosity about the plate he'd left. Bran's envelope containing Daniel's instructions and payment waited in the leaf litter not far away. Daniel scooped it up and tucked it into his pocket before retreating to the porch. The crows had gathered in the tree outside the door again. Their mournful caws rose as they saw him, and several shifted warily. The tree was nearly dead. A few stray leaves clung to it, but Daniel suspected it would be gone within a year. The crows were so numerous that they almost appeared like surrogate leaves, dark and ever-shifting, as they weighed down the branches. He ducked his head as he passed underneath and waded through the tangle of dead bushes and living, snaking vines. He'd done his best to memorize the garden's layout from the window, and he pressed through the plants in the direction he remembered seeing the tomb. Bran's letter had instructed him to salvage the garden, but keeping the tomb clean had been listed first, so Daniel assumed that was the priority. He'd already wasted the entire morning poking around the mansion and chasing cats, so he figured it was time to do some work and earn his keep. He found the copse of pine trees first. They shielded the tomb almost perfectly, and he had to weave between them to find the slate-gray stone facade. The building was beautiful, even in disrepair. Built entirely out of stone slabs, it was almost large enough to be a small house. The peaked roof was a few feet higher than Daniel's head, and the walls had been carved to create images of plants and animals. The arched entryway led into a 6-foot-wide nook where people could shelter. Hints of dark brown suggested a door was set into the back of the nook, but Daniel couldn't get close enough to be sure. Vicious, thorny bushes had overgrown the space, tumbling out of the entryway and clustering around the tomb's sides. Ivy tangled through the bushes, and the plants simultaneously supported and strangled each other. Daniel ran his fingers through his hair as he examined the mess. It was no wonder Bran wanted it cleared. There was something innately horrible about a person's final resting place being smothered in the ugly, thorny plants. Daniel looked at his hands. He really needed gloves if he didn't want his fingers shredded. But then he had no idea how quickly Bran would find his note and deliver his supplies. Find a compromise. He examined the walls. The ivy grew higher than the bushes. Their stems snaked around the intricate carvings on the walls and across the roof and seemed to engulf the crypt. If they had been under control, they might have created a sweet softening effect. But they'd grown so far out of bounds that the effect was suffocating. Daniel jogged back to his groundskeeper's cottage. Inside the small kitchen, he found a knife and 2 tea towels. He dropped off the lamp and the envelope with his payment. Then he returned to the tomb and wrapped the towels around his fists for protection. The work was clumsy and awkward, but Daniel managed to gain some height by clambering onto a fallen pine tree to reach the higher vines. Thorns still pricked him, even through the cloths, but he made steady progress cutting the ivy that grew over the tomb's roof. Fistful after fistful of the dark green leaves shed away from the stone, and Daniel let them fall into a clear patch of ground where he could collect them later. By the time he'd circled the building and cleared the errant ivy, his hands were raw, and the sun had fallen below the treetops. The knife was hopelessly coated in sap, and Daniel cleaned it on one of the cloths as he stepped back. Even though he hadn't touched the bushes, the improvement was immense. Daniel grinned at his handiwork, delighted at the way the building had regained some of its dignity without plants weighing its roof down. The tomb's front was easier to see, too. Carved amongst the elaborate leafwork, scrolls, and miniature pillars was a name, Annalise Myrix. The emblem above it matched the brooch the girl in the painting had worn. The date carved beside the name made Daniel's heart suddenly heavy. 1791 to 1803. She'd lived to be only 12 years old. Was she sick? Her portrait had incredibly pale skin, but I'd assumed that was the artist's interpretation of what was fashionable at the time. She died young, but she must have been dearly loved to be immortalized in that painting and this crypt. He remembered the very slight lift of her lips and the way her eyes had reflected fear. Did she know she was going to die? Was the painting a deliberate effort to memorialize her before she left Earth? The sunset was full of bloody reds and glaring golds. Daniel shook the towels off his hands, wrapped the knife in them, and clambered back towards his cottage. He'd intended to return to town before the day was over, but he'd become too consumed in his work and let the sun set. Daniel stopped outside the groundskeeper's cottage. Compared to the mansion and the gardens, the small, tidy building felt comforting, cozy, even. He rubbed an aching hand over the back of his neck. Having his own room and unlimited food would be nice. It would be even nicer to not have to struggle through the forest again. But even though he could handle Craven Manor during the day, he still felt uneasy about lingering after sunset. There's caution, and then there's paranoia. You've spent a whole day here with nothing horrible happening. Take a chance. Stay the night. He nudged his cottage's door open. Without direct sunlight, it felt unnaturally bleak. Daniel hunted for a light switch without luck. He hadn't seen lights anywhere on the property. The house had oil lamps on the wall and fireplaces in most rooms. Daniel suspected it had never been connected to electricity. He didn't have a fridge either. That was fine, though. He'd gotten used to drinking his tea and coffee black since Kyle didn't like him using the milk, but it meant any meat or perishables would have to be eaten on the day he bought them. Desperate people can't be picky. He snorted a laugh as he knelt in front of the fireplace. Before coming to Craven Manor, he'd felt desperate, always clawing for just enough money to pay rent and eat, running the endless treadmill of job applications and rejections, and feeling that homelessness was always just a misstep away. Craven Manor had a different atmosphere, however. As he stacked kindling in the fireplace, Daniel tried to put his finger on it. The manor wasn't a cheerful place. It wasn't bright or welcoming, but it felt secure. The last 200 years hadn't managed to crumble it. Storms could beat at its walls, plants could try to choke it, age could eat at the furniture, but it still stood just as tall and proud. For all of the property's secrets and intimidating atmosphere, he felt more secure in the cottage than he had at Kyle's apartment. That was a startling revelation. At Kyle's place, he'd always felt like a guest. He might have paid half of the rent and utilities, but his name wasn't on the lease. Even his room hadn't fully been his own. Kyle's guitar, old clothing, and relics from abandoned hobbies cluttered one wall, making the small space even more claustrophobic. but at Craven Manor, Daniel had his own house.
My own house.
He said it out loud, testing the words. He liked the way they sounded. He didn't own the groundskeeper's cottage, but it felt like his, as if he had the right to decorate it, to move in new furniture, and to sleep there without fear of being thrown out.
Don't get too attached.
He placed a log on top of the blazing kindling and left it to catch fire. The envelope waited on the desk beside the lamp, and Daniel opened it and tipped the contents out.
The coins might still be worthless. The owner could be crazy. You may still wake up in the morning missing a kidney.
But somehow, the fears felt less real than they had the day before. He'd started to build a mental picture of Craven's owner as a recluse who avoided human contact as much as possible. That suited Daniel just fine. He turned the coins over. The crest on them matched the one in the painting and on the tomb. No wonder it had looked familiar.
A family crest, maybe? I wonder if I could find anyone who recognizes it.
This property must have been well known when it was inhabited. The house is large enough that it probably needed a host of maids to maintain it. Daniel stacked the coins and put them aside. He shook out the two notes, reread them, then left them flat on the table. If the job was legitimate, and he was seriously starting to believe it was, he didn't want to do anything to jeopardize it.
Rules. No strangers are allowed onto the property. Do not enter the tower. Do not leave the groundskeeper's cottage between midnight and dawn. Draw your curtains. Keep the door locked. If you hear knocking, do not answer it.
The final rule sounded ominous no matter how he looked at it, but he wasn't in a position to buck against his instructions. He pulled the window's heavy drapes together until no moonlight came through, then turned the door's lock. As an extra precaution, he dragged the table's chair under the door handle. If someone really did intend to attack him in the middle of the night, he would at least hear them and have some warning. Daniel made himself a simple dinner out of the tins in the cupboard and two slices of bread cooked over the fire. He'd barely slept the previous night, and he was sore from the work, so he figured there was no harm in an early bedtime. He boiled a pot of water over the fire and awkwardly washed himself, then he changed into clean clothes from his bag and crawled into the bed. It was warm and soft, and the crackling fire created a soothing drone that lulled him into a feeling of security. The happy glow lasted until shortly after midnight, when something started tapping at his door. Chapter 7. Daniel started upright, blinking furiously, as the sheets fell away from him. Sleep crowded his mind and made him sluggish, and it took a minute to remember he was no longer at Kyle's. The knock at the door wasn't a harsh rap, but a soft, curious tip-tip-tip. Daniel doubted it would have woken him if his nerves hadn't been wound so tightly from the day before. He slipped out of bed, and his toes curled as they touched the cold floor. The fire had burnt low in its grate. What was left of the glowing embers built layers of shadows across the room's furniture.
Tip-tip-tip-tip.
It was a question, an invitation, and a request all in one. Daniel reached towards the door, impulsively wanting to unfasten the lock and see who was outside, but stilled his hand. The clock on his desk read 12:19 a.m. He wasn't allowed to open the door or look through the window until dawn.
Why?
Fear slammed into him. The rule had been confusing and even unsettling before, but now it dripped with malevolence.
Who is it? What doesn't Bran want me to see?
Daniel's fingers itched to tweak the window's curtain aside. The panes were near the door. All he would need to do was pull the corner back and peek through. The tapping fell silent. Daniel waited, every muscle tense, then flinched as the tapping shifted to the wall next to the door. He rotated slowly to follow the noise as it ghosted around the cottage. Light knocks grazed over his window. Deeper, slower ones wrapped over the space just above the skirting. Daniel tried to swallow, but his tongue was dry and tacky. "Don't be afraid. Your door is locked. Whatever it is, can't get in." He slunk towards the fireplace, afraid of making noise in case it would encourage the entity outside, but desperate for more warmth and light. He propped one of the smaller logs on top of the embers and waited for it to catch. The tapping sound echoed from the back of his home. It reached as high as the roof, and fresh fear spiked through Daniel's blood. Adrenaline infused him with energy he couldn't spend and made him twitchy. What could reach the roof? There's no ladder, no fallen trees to climb on. What the hell is out there? The knocking had completely circled the building. The final raps, slow and serious, like a final warning, rang out from the front door. Then silence filled the room again. Daniel stayed crouched on the ground beside the fire. The earlier warmth he'd felt towards Craven Manor had evaporated. All he wanted was for dawn to break through the infernal darkness so that he could leave. The fire didn't feel hot enough to warm his back, as shivers ran through him. Every little noise sounded magnified by the night air. Branches creaked in the wind. Insect whirs were distorted into an alien language. A crow cried out, then was silent. Minutes trickled into hours, and Daniel's exhaustion won out. He collapsed sideways on the rug by the fireplace and dozed fitfully. When he finally shook himself back into wakefulness, dawn's light glossed around the edges of the window's curtains.
"It's over."
He stumbled to his feet and shook his left leg. It had gone numb where he'd lain on it, and pins and needles dug into him as he hopped towards the window. "Dawn means it's safe, doesn't it?" He pulled back the corner of the curtain. The stone step outside his door was visible, but no one occupied it. Shadows played with early sunlight amongst the erratic garden surrounding his house. Daniel turned his attention towards Craven Manor. The sun was behind it, making it appear solid black, but he could see the tower stretching up higher than the roof. Light glinted off the curved dome. Something moved in its window.
What was that?
Daniel pulled the curtains fully apart to clear his view, but the shape in the tower had disappeared. He could have sworn he'd seen something that looked like a woman's silhouette. But no matter how hard he strained, all he could see were the two curtains bordering the glass. They shifted a fraction in the breeze.
Maybe that's all there was? Maybe I saw the curtains move and thought they were a person?
The explanation wasn't as convincing as he would have liked, but he couldn't see any other answer. No one could be living in the house without disturbing the heavy dust everywhere, and Daniel hadn't seen any tracks other than his own since he'd arrived. The memory of the door, tall and painted black with the white cross over its front, made him uneasy. He started to turn away from the cottage's window, but stopped when he noticed a smudge on it. The shape was vague and blurred, but it looked like a hand. Daniel squinted as he leaned closer. At the tips of the smudge, he found tiny whorls from a fingerprint.
Who?
He held his hand up next to it. There was a significant size difference. From palm to fingertips, it was half as large as his.
Is it from the thing that paced around my house last night?
He felt physically sick at the idea, but the way the mark was blurred made him think it might not be fresh. Someone had to visit the cottage to clean it and stock its pantry. The handprint might be from then. He rubbed the goosebumps on his exposed arms. He couldn't remember seeing the print the previous day, but he had been rushing through his examination of the cottage. It wasn't too far-fetched to imagine he'd overlooked it.
All right,
Think logically, Daniel. Are we going to stay? His gut said to get out. He might not be comfortable at Kyle's, but at least people didn't knock at the door in the early hours of the morning, except for one time, when a drunk man thought it was his apartment and became angry when his key wouldn't fit. Daniel managed to crack a smile at the memory. Kyle had emerged from his room, brandishing a baseball bat. He and the drunk man had yelled at each other through the door until the stranger finally gave up and shambled off. Daniel's smile faltered. Kyle was rough around the edges, but they were still cousins. Daniel owed him a debt of gratitude for opening up his home, and he'd left Kyle in the middle of the night without so much as a goodbye. Then Daniel thought of Fletch, the fast food worker who had usurped him on a whim. The man probably hadn't meant any harm, but he'd still caused it inadvertently. "I don't want to go back there." Daniel dug through his bag to find the two warmest jackets he owned and layered them over his shirt. "I'll let Kyle know I'm okay, but I won't be moving back in if I can help it." He pulled the chair away from the door and unbolted it. Frosty morning air assaulted him and made him shudder despite the extra layers of clothes. As he stood on the doorstep, rubbing his hands together, he became aware of faint noises coming through the trees and disturbing the morning stillness. The sounds didn't seem organic. Footsteps? Footsteps and something being dragged across the ground? Daniel ran his fingers through his hair in a futile effort to look respectable. It had to be his mystery employer. Who else would visit Craven Manor so close to dawn? Daniel jogged into the garden and did his best to locate the source of the disturbance. The noises became clearer as he drew closer to them, until he broke out of the tangled shrubs and dying trees near Craven Manor's entrance. Daniel slowed to what he hoped looked like a casual stroll. A young man, not much older than Daniel, was bent over a wheelbarrow beside the stone steps. Shaggy brown hair extended almost to his jacket collar. He was dressed in simple but clean clothes, the kind Daniel associated with people who worked with their hands, and even through the bulky jacket, it was clear he carried some muscle. The flock of black birds shifted in their tree as Daniel approached. The man was arranging the tools Daniel had requested inside the wheelbarrow, almost like it was a gift basket and presentation was important. Daniel's shoes crunched through a patch of fallen leaves. The man twitched and swiveled in Daniel's direction, his eyes wide and his face tense. For a moment, the yard was eerily silent. Daniel had the overwhelming sensation that his presence was unwanted, but it was too late to retreat. He swallowed and held out a hand, praying it wouldn't shake.
"Hey, sorry to startle you. Bran, right?"
The other man stared at the offered hand. A twitchy smile created crinkles around his eyes, but the grin didn't feel genuine. Perspiration shone across his forehead.
"No? I thought you were. You're not Bran? You don't own this place?"
"No. Sorry, I was expecting..." Daniel, feeling lost, cleared his throat, his hand still extended.
"I'm the groundskeeper, newly hired. I've been waiting to meet Bran."
The other man finally relaxed. He flexed his shoulders as a chuckle washed the tenseness away from around his mouth, though it still didn't touch his eyes.
"Yikes. Sorry, man. You really startled me. No one was here the last two times I visited, and I didn't expect anyone to be here today either. I'm Joel, by the way."
Joel finally shook Daniel's hand. His grip was firm, if a little clammy.
"Daniel, I guess you haven't met Bran either?"
"No."
Joel scuffed his boot through the fallen leaves. Seeing such a beefy man look frightened was strange, but that was the only way Daniel could describe him.
"I work in Arbor's hardware store with my dad. We got contracted to deliver supplies. Dad's not really well enough to bring them himself, so he sends me instead."
But Daniel thought he could guess his companion's thoughts. It's not the most hospitable place, is it? Joel nodded furiously as he lowered his voice to a whisper.
It's a damn nightmare. Crows everywhere. A house like something out of a horror movie. And this guy, Bran, we've never even met him. He just sends instructions in letters. Every time I come here, I'm half expecting to get murdered by a crazy axe man.
I'm glad I'm not the only one. But you took the job?
We kinda had to.
Joel shrugged, and he looked uncomfortable again.
We were maybe a month away from having our business foreclosed when this guy leaves a letter under our door. He wanted us to clean up a cottage and make some deliveries to his house. And in return, he paid us a small fortune, way more than the work was worth. It was so weird, we would have thought it was a prank if he hadn't sent payment up front.
Daniel tilted his head towards the forest behind himself. You cleaned the cottage?
Yeah, this guy, Bran, said he wanted it livable, and we're supposed to deliver food once a week, along with any other supplies he requests, like this.
Joel motioned towards the wheelbarrow.
No specifications about brands or colors or anything, and no way to contact him to ask, so we had to guess.
Inside the barrow were the shears, a saw, a shovel, and the work gloves Daniel had requested the previous day.
They're for me, and they look great. I'm not fussy.
Well, they're top of the line. We don't want to screw this guy, not when he's paying our rent.
You got them here fast.
Daniel couldn't stop a frown as he glanced from the barrow up to the house. It showed no more life than it had on the day he'd arrived. No lights in the windows, no twitching curtains, no signs of habitation.
I only requested them last night.
We got Bran's letter under our door this morning, along with additional payment. He sent more than the stuff is worth, so Dad wanted to make the delivery a priority.
Daniel fished the gold coins out of his pocket. He glanced around, feeling slightly uncomfortable about discussing income with a stranger, but he was too curious to resist.
Does he pay you in these, too?
That's it.
Joel rolled his shoulders again and scowled at the coins.
Weirdest thing I ever heard of. Like I said, if our business was doing any better, we wouldn't have taken the job. There's something really wrong about the whole thing.
Uneasiness crawled through Daniel's stomach like a fat, hungry insect. He tucked the coins back into his pocket and licked at dry lips. Joel's expression took on a hint of alarm.
Hey, sorry, please don't repeat any of that to the owner. I didn't mean to complain. We're grateful for the work, really.
No, don't worry, I get it. It's weird. I'm still trying to get used to it myself.
Joel was silent for a moment as his gaze moved from Daniel to the gardens, to the house, and back to Daniel.
You're staying here, right?
Daniel shrugged.
I guess I am.
Man. Joel ran a hand over his chin, his eyes still dancing over his surroundings.
I get the heebie-jeebies just visiting. I can't imagine living here. Want me to bring you anything else?
The letter didn't say anything about running power to the cottage, just said to make it livable, and I didn't want to presume. But I can bring in a generator and some white goods, a fridge and kettle and stuff.
It was a serious temptation. Daniel didn't technically need electrical appliances, but they would make his life a whole lot easier. On the other hand, Bran hadn't given him a budget, and he didn't want to wear his welcome thin by asking for luxury items.
Joel saw his expression and flashed him a tight smile.
It's fine. I won't bill him for them. His original payment will easily cover it.
If it's not too much trouble.
No, not at all. I mean, getting the truck through the forest is always an adventure, but I've got to make weekly food deliveries anyway.
Joel laughed, and it held only a hint of discomfort.
I'll drop off the generator next time I'm coming by, fill it with fuel, and plug your equipment in. It won't power anything this big.
He waved towards the mansion towering over them, and his smile flickered for an instant before he reaffixed it.
But we've got a model that will power 4 or 5 appliances at once.
I could have coffee without boiling water over the fire. Milk won't perish overnight. And I could even have a fan for summer.
Staying at Craven Manor long-term was starting to look much less problematic.
I'd really appreciate that. You said you drive a truck here. Did you come through the gate? I can barely squeeze through the gap on foot.
Nah, no gate, but the path's hellishly overgrown.
Joel pointed behind himself, towards a section of garden Daniel hadn't explored.
I can only get the truck to about 50 meters away, then move everything in by hand.
So Craven Manor does have a road leading to a different town after all. Daniel tried to see the path Joel had taken, but the trees grew too closely together to make it out. A thought occurred, and he shot his companion a quick glance. When Bran hired you, did he, give you any specific instructions? Any rules?
He did. Don't come between midnight and dawn, don't invite anyone else to this place, and don't enter the house.
I was told to stay out of the tower, but Joel has been forbidden from the entire building. There's something in the manor that Bran doesn't want discovered. The unscratchable itch of curiosity returned. Joel scuffed his boot across the ground again.
Anything else you want me to bring you?
No, this is great. Thanks. Daniel could take a hint. You can head home. Thanks for dropping this off.
Absolutely.
Joel took a step back, then stopped. He glanced from Daniel to the house and back, then made a grumbling noise in the back of his throat. He fished through his pockets and pulled out a pen and paper.
You're here by yourself, right? If anything goes really bad, like bad enough you need to get out in a hurry, you can call me. I keep this phone beside me all the time, even at night. I'm sure there's nothing to worry about, but you know, just in case.
Daniel took the slip of paper. It held a mobile number. He didn't know what to say. He tucked the paper into a pocket and managed a smile. Thanks. Joel raised a hand in farewell, but he was already halfway to the bank of trees.
Take care.
Daniel waited until Joe had disappeared amongst the garden, then he released a breath as he looked at the wheelbarrow. I should have asked him for a phone. Joel's number isn't much help if I have nothing to call it with. Crows cackled as they settled into the tree behind him. The sun was up, but the thick foliage blocked out much of its light and left Daniel feeling chilled. He rubbed his hands over his arms and tried to look at the situation from an optimistic point of view. Joel and his father prepared the house for me. That's one mystery answered. Bran apparently prefers being hands-off with his property. I don't mind that, just I wish the whole thing made a bit more sense. Joel received letters with instructions, just like Daniel did, and he was being paid in the same gold coins. That wasn't where the similarities ended. Both Joel and Daniel had been too desperate to refuse Bran's offer, no matter how uncomfortable it made them.
It's like he's preying on the vulnerable.
Daniel struggled to dismiss the thought. He ran his hand over the wheelbarrow's handle. His request for gardening equipment had been answered so swiftly that it was disorienting. He didn't know how that was possible when he was seemingly isolated.
Maybe Bran has a security camera or motion sensor installed in the foyer to alert him when I go inside.
Except Craven Manor doesn't have any electricity to power them.
Maybe Bran hired someone to drop by every evening and look for notes. Maybe that's who I heard knocking on my cottage last night.
Crows shuffled above him, their feathers creating a grim rustling. When he looked at them, one cawed softly. They seemed to have gathered around the ancient, oversized crow Daniel had seen the day before. Its unrelenting, unblinking stare made Daniel uncomfortable. He picked up the wheelbarrow's handles and began pushing it towards the crypt.
Chapter 8.
Daniel couldn't stop churning through the new knowledge as he hiked towards the mausoleum. He'd all but sealed his employment at Craven Manor by accepting Joel's offer of a generator. Leaving the house once supplies had been paid for would be a shady move. Daniel squinted up at the tower as he passed under it, but the only thing he saw in its windows was the reflection of the overcast sky.
Maybe I was paranoid over nothing, The taps could have come from a night bird, or maybe even a squirrel. Just because they sounded like a human asking to be let in doesn't mean that's what it was. The crows exploded out of the tree in a burst of cries and whirring wings. Daniel flinched, but the birds passed over him and vanished into the forest past the fence. "It's a creepy house, but that doesn't mean it's bad." He ran his tongue over his lips. "This could be home. Maybe you can be happy here. Your own bed, supplies delivered at your request, and plenty of nature. Oh boy, is there nature." He dropped the wheelbarrow's handles when he reached the crypt. The vines he'd torn off the previous day lay in clumps around the stone building, and Daniel gathered them into the wheelbarrow. He didn't know if the house had a compost pile, but one would need to be set up. By the time he was ready to add new plants to the property, the organic material would have decomposed enough to be good fertilizer. Daniel wondered if Bran's offer to pay for supplies extended to saplings to replace some of the dead trees. Daniel found a clear patch of ground to dump the severed vines, then returned to the mausoleum and strapped on the gloves. Joel hadn't lied when he'd said they were good brands. His hands barely felt the thorns as he clipped branches off and tore the bushes out of the ground. Sadly, the gloves couldn't protect the rest of him. His jeans developed a series of tiny tears, and red scores appeared across his arms. At the same time, the process was cathartic. Every new prick meant fewer of the ugly black shrubs to cluster in the tomb's entryway. Within a few hours, he'd cleared enough to stand inside the shelter. Daniel paused to admire the space. It had been designed as a place where people could sit to pay their respects to the departed, or even shelter from the rain. Stone benches had been carved into both walls. The tomb's doors were wood, as thick as the house's main doors, and carved with leaves and flourishes to match the outside decoration. He gripped one of the ugly bushes around the door's base. The shrub came up to his shoulders and was hard to get out of the ground. After a series of grunts and muffled swear words, he finally tore it free, but a strange clinking noise joined the sound of his scuffing shoes. Daniel tossed the bush aside. It had been hiding a silver tray and two teacups resting on the ground. The cups were fine china, with delicate flowers painted in gold around their lips. The tray looked like it had been expensive, but the whole arrangement was coated in grime. Decades of plant growth over them had left a gritty black residue on the china, and a multitude of small bugs had died inside the teacups. Daniel kicked the bush outside the eave, then carefully lifted the tray. The metal had stuck to the stone, and its underside held a layer of red rust. He tried to imagine someone visiting the crypt, a grieving parent, perhaps, to have tea with the dead Annalise. But no scenario he could conjure explained why the cups had been abandoned there. The malaise that had dogged him since arriving at Craven Manor intensified. It was heavy and tight, like a coat that didn't fit properly, and Daniel couldn't get the tension to leave his shoulders. Leaving the cups in the tomb didn't feel right, so he carried the tray out. The crows circled above him like vultures. He wondered if that was their routine. Spend mornings in the tree by the house, the afternoons in the forest, scavenging for food, then circle the building before descending into the same tree for the night. He normally loved birds, but the crows showed none of the joy or energy he associated with their feathered cousins. He climbed the stairs to the house. The door was still open, and the same leaves littered the foyer, but he held still for a moment, listening for signs of life. His paranoia grew as the house echoed every tiny sound back to him. The tree branches scraping against the stone wall, the wind whistling through tiny cracks, even the crackle of leaves being pushed along the foyer floor by errant bursts of wind sounded desperately loud. He braced himself, then stepped inside. Without the lamp, it was hard to see where he was going. Even when he pushed the front door fully open, its light wasn't enough to brighten the foyer. An idea occurred to him and he crossed to the fireplace. The half-melted candles there were set in old-fashioned bronze holders with curling handles. There were no matches, but he recognized flint hidden amongst the dead branches and empty picture frames. It only took a few minutes to light one of the wicks. He unstuck the candle's holder from the mantelpiece and held it ahead of himself. The plate he'd left for the cat was still in the space between two chairs. The pink spam seemed untouched. Daniel sighed and added the plate to the silver tray. Maybe the cat couldn't recognize spam as food. Hopefully Joel's next delivery will include real meat. Poor cat. Daniel circled the edge of the foyer and opened doors in the hopes of finding a bathroom or kitchen. The hinges were all stiff from disuse, and he often had to kick drifts of dead leaves away. The first few doors opened into a ballroom, a dining room, and a magnificent library. Daniel only stayed long enough to see that most of the books were still whole, but that several of their spines were decaying off. He got lucky with one of the doors hidden beside the staircase. The leaves were thicker there, banked high like snowdrifts, but once he kicked them out of the way and got the door open, he found himself in what appeared to be the staff's quarters. It was a smaller, less opulent dining area. The center of the room was taken up by a table with no less than 30 chairs crowded around it. Doors were set into its walls, and he tried one to the right. It led into what seemed to be a sewing and repair room. An old-fashioned dress lay out on the table, pins stuck around where repairs had been started. The next door opened into a washroom, where clothes filled large tubs. They had frozen into strange, crumpled shapes, as though they'd been put in there to soak and then were forgotten. Long, dried mildew dotted the fabric. Daniel bent close to see a woman's dress in one tub and white maid uniforms in another. He retreated to the mess hall and tried its final door. It led into the kitchens, and Daniel's sense of surrealism increased. Pots rested on the stovetop, dry herbs hung from hooks in the ceiling, and a fossilized loaf of bread on the central table was slowly being turned to dust by insects. The house had been evacuated at short notice. The staff had dropped whatever they were doing and just left. Why? What happened that they wouldn't try to salvage anything on the way out? He'd intended to wash the cups and tray, but now it occurred to him that the pipes might not work anymore. He turned a tap and waited. A deep, intense grating noise echoed from somewhere below his feet. A moment later, black ichor gushed out of the spout. Daniel wrinkled his nose at the stench that accompanied the water. It was the same color and consistency as what had come out of his cottage's taps, so he waited for the water to clear. It took several minutes before he felt safe dunking his hands under the stream. He washed the remainder of the ichor down the sink, then tipped the uneaten spam into one of the grimy pots on the stove and submerged everything in water. He spent a few minutes trying to scrub the gunk off the teacups and tray. It was a hopeless cause, though. His own plate came out fairly clean, but the porcelain and silver had spent too long exposed to the elements for the stains to come off without soap and heated water. He sighed and left them on the bench to dry. If the kitchens had been tidy, he would have put more effort into the dishes. As it was, washing up while surrounded by squalor felt like a Sisyphean task. Maybe Bran is planning to hire some cleaners once the house's exterior is less of a nightmare to navigate. Daniel raised the candle and tried the kitchen's second door. It led back into the foyer. He was halfway to the front door when he felt eyes on his back. It took a moment to locate the two amber spheres on the second floor landing. Daniel moved closer and squinted against the shadows surrounding the cat. It stood directly ahead of Annalise's portrait. He could barely see the whites of her eyes and a hint of her hesitant smile. "Hello," Daniel called to the cat. "You didn't eat your food." The cat's tail twitched, black moving through black. Daniel's eyes ached from trying to see where the cat ended and the gloom began. "I'll bring you some more soon, okay? Something you might like a little better." He backed to the door,